Welcome to another episode of El ADN Podcast, where every week we sit down with the movers and shakers of our culture for an honest and intimate conversation about their career journey, including all the challenges and failures they've overcome to reach their current success. I'm your host, Victoria Leandra. Today, we're meeting Brittany Chavez. She's the CEO and founder of e-commerce platform Shop Latinx, a first-of-its-kind online marketplace for Latinx-owned businesses. The company recently raised $1 million in its pre-seed round of funding. Since launching in 2016, Shop Latinx has gone from an Instagram account supporting Latino brands to a venture-backed startup poised to completely transform the e-commerce landscape. Brittany and I talked about how she sees therapy as an investment for her company, how to find the right investors, and the importance of laying low while building your business. I'm so excited to be here with you, Brittany. I followed your journey for a long time. I don't remember how I got connected to you, and I don't remember how I found out about Shop Latinx, but I do remember that it's been a while now, and seeing you grow, at least online, has been really, really awesome and really rewarding. And I'm sure a lot of the community feels that way too.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. And I'm really excited to talk to you today.
You launched Shop Latinx in 2016. And at the time, you sort of had this gut feeling that it was going to be something big, but you didn't know what it would turn out to be. You called it a spiritual message that you received in order to create Shop Latinx. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's great. And you're spot on. You know, in 2016, I remember exactly where I was when the idea for Shop Latinx came about, and I had opened up my laptop and started Googling Hispanic-owned businesses, Latinx, Latino, Latina, any way that you could spell it. I was looking it up, and I came across statistics that showed that we have so much buying power, but there was no centralized place for us to support these Latinx businesses and redistribute that wealth back into our communities. I was talking to an investor the other day who was also Latina, and she was like, we are the fastest growing demographic in the United States, but we're almost kind of like the sleeping giant where we just don't understand our collective power. To me, that moment, I had just finished an Uber shifts. I was an Uber driver, and I worked like around 12 to 14 hours that day, and I came home so tired. I jumped into bed and just opened up that laptop, and then that night I had created the Instagram account. So in 2016, Shop Latinx started out as an Instagram account, and I was inspired by platforms like Humans in New York that told the stories behind the business owners, right? But over time, I soon realized that my passion then became more about these products and really honing in on who that Gen Z young millennial Latina was, you know, both on the consumer end and on the business owner end. You know, we're living in a time where access to entrepreneurship is becoming more and more democratized. And it's women that look like you and I that are really the new faces of e-commerce, because we know what it's like to build these micro communities. And then once we develop that business acumen is how we can build a freaking empire. Over the last few years, I had gone through so many struggles, both personally and professionally. You know, and during this time, Shop Latinx was still an Instagram account, but I saw that it really resonated with this community, you know, and it was something very special, and it was something beyond just Instagram. Instagram was just the facilitator for this amazing community. I had gotten, you know, some feedback from my parents, you know, get some stability. You know, it's hard to see you living paycheck to paycheck, or like, you know, crying over, you know, not knowing how you're going to pay rent next month. But I knew that Shop Latinx is very special. It was just this conviction that I always had. I didn't know what it was going to look like, but I knew that this, you know, Shop Latinx and the support I had was very special, in that it was not only going to take me out of survival mode, but so many people, so many business owners along with me. So it's been an honor to be a part of the journey of these small businesses, as well as being able to spotlight so many amazing Latinx creatives and artists within our community as well.
You mentioned something that I want to pick up on, and it's that you had this conviction. And it's very interesting because I feel like a lot of us have a conviction of something, whether that is a business idea or a relationship or a career path, you really know something in your heart, and no one may understand it, but you know it and you believe in it. How did you listen to it?
My immediate thought is like, I don't know. You know, I think for me, I never got a taste of what being financially secure looks like. You know, I never worked a great retail, you know, a great corporate job. So I think that I was so rock bottom in my life that it was only up from here, you know? So I had either the choice to risk it. It's not even a risk, because that was my life, you know, a risk to my life would have been considered a high risk for other people that were living comfortably, whereas that was just my day to day. So I think it was either continue on the path that I'm on and continue to submit to my convictions, or, you know, and the outcome could be so great, you know, greater than I can even fathom in this moment, or I could quit, have that regret from quitting, go start to apply for entry level jobs, because that's, you know, on paper, all I really qualify for, and then try to break these glass ceilings so that I can become a marketing manager of a Fortune 500 company. That's how I kind of compared the two. Let me just bet on myself. You know, let me not, it's not just bet on myself, but bet on this community and this platform that I had built. Let me bet on myself, both myself and Shop Latinx, and the people that, you know, really support me.
I love that. You said something else that resonated, and it's that the community in general is not very financial savvy. And I think a lot of times we have a business idea, but if you're from a working class family, you don't come from money, so you don't know the language, and it scares you, right? Because we are taught to sort of be financially secure, because if not, we won't have anything to fall back on. So
yeah,
walk me through the process of like having an idea, but then putting an action plan to knowing and understanding the finance aspect and the money conversation. Some CEOs decide to go to business school, for example, in order to get that knowledge. I believe you didn't do that. So what did you do in order to get that knowledge?
So during this time, so I started the Instagram account in 2016, and it wasn't until 2019 that I got enough validation from my consumers that a marketplace was a viable concept to incubate. In 2019 is when I got into my first accelerator program. So accelerator programs are basically like an accelerated business school that's focused on validating your concept for your business idea. And so this was for free. It was called Grid 110. And Patty of Hija de Tu Madre got into it. She's one of my best friends and told me about it. So I applied and I created a deck. In those 3 months, I had learned so much about my business. I had launched with my MVP, so that's a minimum viable product. And I think, you know, I had been such a poor student from elementary to high school. And this was the first time that I ever felt passionate about something. So every day I'd be sitting in front of the classroom, you know, in front of in their night classes, because people were working 9 to 5. And asking all the questions I needed, you know, to really make sure that Shop Latinx was in good standing to scale. And then after Grid 110, I had gotten into another accelerator program called Techstars. It's an accelerator program for companies that want to be venture capital backed. So that's when I got my first investment of $100,000. Prior to that, Shop Latinx was really sustained off my random gigs and Uber driving, you know, and I did this during the pandemic. So early last year, I got into Techstars. We got our first investment during this time. You know, it's a step above Grid 110 in the sense we're like, we're learning about the financial modeling. We're learning all these different acronyms, you know, and the VC terminology. And it really prepared me to then raise another round of venture capital from top, you know, Silicon Valley-based investors. And then that's when we raised around $1 million. I mean, I say that very, all of this very blasé. It was very It was extremely hard. I made the decision. Like I said, there was a two-way street. I decided to bet on myself. So if I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that 110% and really see it all the way through.
In a space that doesn't seem accessible at all to Latinas, for many reasons, I'm sure it's very encouraging to hear that these accelerator programs actually work. Since you don't come from the corporate world, you didn't necessarily have a role model for which mm-hmm. to follow as a leader. But then you've become such a great and empathic leader. You used a word or a phrase, and it's about leading through vulnerability. What makes you such a great leader?
I appreciate the kind words, but it's a journey. You know, I think I was talking to one of my lead investors this morning. He and I had biweekly calls, and I was like, how, you know, to be a founder, you really have to have a level of self-awareness to accept critique and feedback. I was just like, damn. And then also on top of that, like a level of humility, because some things are kind of hard to hear, but it's for the betterment of not only yourself, but your team and your company. And then something else happened today where I was talking to, you know, someone on the team, and we're talking about money. I had hired this person to do one role, and now they're doing an entirely different role that's way more senior than what I had hired them for. And the goal and the intention was to give them a raise within the next few months. But, you know, I was just curious to know why they had never brought it up to me, you know, and I was just like, hey, question, really random. So today it was a meeting about going through the job description and working on the job description and her new job description, because she has so many more responsibilities now. I asked this person, were you ever going to ask for a raise? And they said, no, you know, and then we started talking about kind of like what Luce Warrior talks about. Luce does a lot of money wounds healing within the Latinx communities. So it was just a really good, transparent conversation about money. And I think it's so interesting, right? Because me and my team, we're all Latinx. You know, we all are, you know, we have a person on the team that's indigenous, Costa Rican, you know, Mexican, I'm Central American. And so we all have these backgrounds of like, you know, we don't talk about money, or like we have these like money wounds or money traumas that now seep into the workplace, right? In ways that, you know, maybe these top other, you know, these companies that are led by white male or white men, they don't really experience. So I think if I'm going to serve this Latinx community, I think that, you know, outwardly we support this Latinx community, I need to do that inwardly as well with my team. So the outcome of this morning's meeting with my team member was really good, you know, and she felt really empowered. So next week she's going to present to me her new job description and the ultimate salary that she wants. And I want to make sure that I try to make that happen, you know? So I think the way that I see it is that I need my team members more than they need me. You know, the vision for Shop Latinx would be severely impacted if any of them were to leave, you know? So I think treating them how I would want to be treated, or if I ever had a boss, you know, like, and I worked at a startup, I'd want someone like me to be my boss, you know? Or I've always admired those teachers in elementary schools that like all the kids loved, you know what I mean? Like all the kids loved, but also they kind of feared when it was time to do the work. And I want to make sure that, you know, everyone on my team has fun, we work hard, and that they're able to challenge themselves to do the things that they've wanted to do in other roles at other jobs. But now they do that here because they have the autonomy and I'm able to trust them.
Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that you're sort of moving their career path forward, which is something that not all leaders are worried about. They're very focused on the now. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about scarcity mindset. I know that this is something that you've opened up about before, and tell me how that's very, very, very present in our everyday lives, especially in the Latino community, how that affected you in building the company and how you've sort of like combated that in a way.
Yeah, I feel like I'm still actively trying to combat it, because I feel like so much of what I do still is rooted in fear. It's rooted in me going back to where I was you know, 10 months ago, living in, you know, a really shitty apartment in East LA with like actual literal like rats in the walls. But when I talk to my therapist, a lot of what I start getting what like cold feet. And then what really comes out at the end of the sessions are like, I just don't want to be broke again, or I just don't want to be poor again, or I just don't want to be where I was, or I don't want to lose this apartment that I worked so hard to furnish because I've never had an apartment like this before. Yeah, that scarcity mindset, it really hinders you from thinking about the bigger picture, you know, because you're here rooted in fear. And I feel like it doesn't allow for you to receive the blessings, you know, and all the abundance that is here for the taking, you know. So, I mean, I'm still actively working through it, you know, and as I'm learning, I'm helping my team, you know, because I, you know, they have scarcity mindset. So I think also too, just giving myself grace that it comes with time, you know, so much has happened in this year. I tweeted that this is probably one of the most challenging, transformative, yet rewarding years of my life, you know, where I actually got to physically see and experience the fruits of my labor that I've been tending to for years. Now I'm actually getting to like live in it and bask in it. And I think just giving myself more grace that it'll go away with time, and just and that I deserve to have the lifestyle that I'm living now and then some. Yeah, just saying that like everything that has been given to me, it wasn't random. I was the one pitching to investors concept for Shop Latinx and telling them why focusing on this Latinx consumer was so important, why it's also going to make them 10x returns on their investment. I did that. Being more proud of myself, you know, celebrating my small wins is what allows me to really overcome scarcity mindset. But again, I'm still actively working on it.
I'm very glad that you, and I want to thank you for opening up about this, because I feel like we're not entirely with you, because I feel like you're very open on social media, but other businesswomen, other people who are CEOs or founders, they feel the pressure to always be perfect or to be at the top of their game, to be killing it at all times. And there's also this side of things, right? The insecurity, the fear, the days in which you're not feeling your best. And yet you recently raised $1 million in pre-seed funding. So how do you live with these two sort of conflicting personalities? And I ask because I feel like I also live with those two personalities.
One, I will say therapy helps me a lot. Once I got this money, I told my investors, like, you know, if you want this to be a successful business, I'm going to invest a lot of money into therapy and wellness, you know? So I think, having a practice, I even consulted with a psychologist, the one that prescribes the medications. I talked to them and they were saying, like, I have a lot of those thoughts all the time, you know, and those thoughts of that are rooted in fear, those are trauma responses. They're not actual thoughts, you know, those are just quick brain triggers, you know, and they're not actual mindful well thought responses. You know, I feel that when it comes to dating, you know, or like, you know, when like someone doesn't call me for 3 hours and I really like them, my mind just goes in the fucking gutter, you know, like of what they could be doing if they're not responding back to my text, you know, or like, I think about, you know, even last night, I had a lot of anxiety. I couldn't really go to sleep because I was thinking about all the things I needed to do. When those thoughts come to you, just kind of shooing them away, you know, and it comes with practice of like, that's not me, that's not true. You know what I mean? I'm actually really intelligent, I'm really capable, or this person actually really likes me. So, you know what I mean? And this is just a trauma response because I've been put in those types of positions when I was younger, or like I was literally molded to be this way as an adult. I think the answer is just like really loving on yourself more.
Now let's talk about the funding. If people didn't know you before, they definitely got to know you through that big news announcement. For those who are listening that do not know how funding works, what were the options? And two, how do you actually get the money? Like, do you do you prep a deck and then you go about the meetings and there's a team setting up those meetings for you? Walk me through that whole process to sort of demystify it a little bit.
Okay, great. So what I raised was $1 million in pre-seed funding. So there's different levels to funding. First, it starts typically with like friends and family, which I, you know, that alone isn't accessible to people like me. And I'm sure a lot of other people, because we don't have friends and family that can just write us, you know, a $10,000 check. So that was out of the picture. There's angel funding. And then there's pre-seed, seed, series A, D, you know, A, B, C, D, whatever, until either the company gets acquired or IPOs like on the stock market. I raised $1 million in pre-seed funding. When you're raising pre-seed, you raise on what's called a SAFE. And it's actually pretty crazy. So as soon as I got out of Techstars, actually near the end of Techstars, the accelerator that I was a part of, they really prepare you for your pre-seed fundraise. My managing director at Techstars, Anna Barber, already has a plethora of contacts. So it's my job to find the VC firms and investors whose investment thesis is aligned with what we are about, right? So Shop Latinx, we're e-commerce, we're marketplace, we're, you know, B2B to C. So there's a lot of different keywords that Shop Latinx fits into, right? But more so we're really just e-commerce and marketplace. So then I have to there's a whole Rolodex of VCs that I can reach out to, but I don't want to waste anyone's time. So now I'm starting to target the VCs that I know could potentially be interested in what I'm building. And yes, and then I also create a pitch deck, right? So there's, in the deck, it's problem, solution, customer size, traction, competitive advantage, competitors, you know, the team, and then how much we're raising is the last slide. And then it's up to me to reach out to all of these, you know, either my MD would make the intros or I would just cold email them. Then I'd set up times. And during this time, it was during the pandemic. And I remember just having like seven investor meetings in a day, you know, and then I will get on these Zoom calls. I'll share my screen and then I'll just run through the deck. Sometimes they'll interrupt me and ask me several questions. Looking back when I do raise my seed round, there's a lot of improvements that I'm going to make. But yeah, so I'm just spending, 2 months in straight, 3 months straight. It was actually this time last year that I was fundraising. And the lead investor that I spoke to today, I remember during this time I was having knots in my stomach because he was waiting weeks to give me a yes. And I actually was talking to him about that this morning. His name is Charles Hudson of Precursor Ventures. And what's great about SAFEs too is that when you fundraise and let's say someone commits to $15,000, you can literally send them the SAFE document, email it to them, have them sign it. Once it's signed, you send them the wire instructions and then they just do it the next week you'll have $15,000 in your bank account. And so what's great is that you can start collecting checks from investors. And so then Charles, he gave us the biggest check, and then so we got that, we put it in. So over time, we were just collecting checks. So I think we have around like 16 investors, anywhere from like 5,000 to like 500,000. Which is crazy.
That's amazing.
And we closed in February of this year.
One part that people often forget about that I learned from one of my podcast guests, Lisette, she decided to start her own PR company. And then she said something that really made a lot of sense. And not everyone does it because some people just say, okay, I'm just going to quit my job and start something out of the blue and I'll figure it along as I go. What she decided to do is that while she was working her corporate job, she went on to do a business plan. And she said, okay, prior to me leaving this, I'm going to create a business plan. I'm sure you had to create a business plan prior to the investing portion of your company. Tell me a little bit about who helped you? What were the steps that you had to take in order to sort of do that? Or was that something that you did through the accelerator program as well?
You know, what's crazy is I've literally never written a business plan. It sounds, I guess, like there's, you know, there's the deck, there's the investor deck that's really robust. And we all know internally what the business plan is. Obviously, you know, I have the financial modeling, I have the, you know, I have all of that, but I have never written a formal business plan. I don't think that's something, especially in the pre-seed stage that we're in, investors were really looking for. So I've never written a business plan.
Part of what really amazes me is that there's no one way of doing things. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, you said something that I think it's interesting, and maybe it's a reminder to yourself too. You said you are the sauce, you are the asset. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Tell me more.
Oh yeah, I think I like tweeted that when I was in like my girl boss Twitter phase. I mean, I think it's true. I feel like that sentiment still stands. You know, I get a lot of questions like, how hard was it for you as a Latina in tech? I get that question asked a lot, and I honestly kind of don't like it. So I'm happy you haven't asked me that, because it's like, I don't know, as a Latina in tech, I don't know what it's not like, what it's like to not be a Latina in tech. So I don't know how much harder it was for me than it was for anyone else. And also too, I think being Latina and given my experience, you know, combined with my past experiences and just upbringings, that has been my superpower, right? So there are so many people, so many investors, so many companies and conglomerates that want to target this Latina consumer, but why is it that Shop Latinx is the company that's really resonating with this Gen Z Latina? It's because I have the sauce that y'all want. You know what I mean?
And you are it.
You can't compete. So just give me the money and I'll help all of us make money, and I'll serve this demographic in a way that's intentional and with love, in a way that y'all can't, because I have it, you know? And because I have it, I hire people who I know have it too. And then we do cool shit because we know it's what works. When it comes to my journey in tech, I'm like, for me, I have so much gratitude. I think it's been awesome. You know, I attract, you know, my background and the way that I speak and the way that I show up on these calls, it attracts the people that it needs to attract. And then those who pass on me, they weren't supposed to be a part of this journey, you know, and that's how I see it. And granted, there's a lot of people in tech that don't look like me or don't have the same conviction about this demographic that I do, that I do. And, you know, I meet with them and they pass, and that's okay, you know. And now I think going into seed, there was a lot of lessons learned that I can take from, you know, pitching last year. You know, I just feel confident that, you know, who I am, the woman that I am, the woman that I've evolved to is the woman that's going to continue to make incredible moves. You know, even when I had nothing, I betted on myself. So now that I have more, like, why stop now?
Mm. If you don't have an elevator speech, this should be it. Just saying. What do you wish you knew before entering the space?
Honestly, I'm going to go with this similar answer to you. You know, like, I think this journey has been so fun. There are so many things that I didn't know that I know now. Yeah, keeping that sense of optimism, but also too, yeah, like, being naive, it helps, because being a founder is hard. So I wouldn't change a thing about my journey. And I know I say that, but it's true though. Like, I wouldn't change a thing. I think maybe now I do need help with like I'm really bad with numbers and like, but it, I'm going to get to it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I always get to it. I always do it. I always make it happen. And I think the journey's fun, not knowing. Mm-hmm. It's fun when you don't know everything.
We've talked we've talked a lot about the accomplishments and the highlights of your career so far, but I think it's, at least for me, it's very important to always bring in a failure, because I think, at least I'm speaking from a personal, I'm speaking for myself, but I think my failures have been some of the things that have taught me the most. So can you tell me a little bit about a time that maybe you were passed on for an opportunity that you really wanted, or something that you consider a failure, and then how you push through it and how you sort of like pick yourself back up?
I had a business partner for about a year, and that relationship didn't go so well. And I think it put me in such a low place in my life. And I thought that I had failed. And I thought that, you know, it was such a big risk on my business, you know, but it was so bad. It was so traumatizing that served as the catalyst for me to start therapy, move to Portland. You know, it was so, so deep in the gutter bad, Victoria, during this moment where I had a business partner and then I eventually let the business partner go. It literally just allowed me to flourish months later after having a lot of deep trauma therapy and get to where I am today. So I think, you know, I really thank that person. And, you know, in retrospect, because that situation really allowed me to like reassess my life and be more protective of my company and, you know, get to where I am now, where I'm really happy with the people that are in my life and I'm really happy with my team. And I love being a solo founder. You know, I've always been a solo founder, except for this point in time where I thought that I really needed someone. Yeah, I think that if anything, I bet on myself even more.
Is there a thing that you've been too afraid to do that you want to do with your business?
Everything that I want to do is going to happen next year, which I'm really excited about. One, I don't know what I don't know. You know, I'm not a CMO. I'm not a former chief marketing officer. I'm just a girl with ambition. And so when it comes to strategic marketing or like these big campaigns, you know, that could be done, that have potentials to be done, maybe I just don't think about them because I can't even fathom what that could look like because I'm so stuck in the day to day. And I think, you know, this year was definitely the year of building, you know, laying low and building. We did like a whole brand redesign. I made some significant hires. And I think next year is going to be the year of, you know, in person, whether that's events, you know, pop-ups, the focus is really going to be marketing driven. I'm a little scared. I think I'm always, you know, something that I'm combating is just like fear of being perceived, fear of perception. You know, I think that's why like I barely post on like my Instagram feed, or like I've become like such an introvert since, you know, in the last few years. It's just this fear of perception. Maybe I think this being in this position of thought leadership for me is something really scary. But I think in the last year, I'm proud of the woman that I've become when it comes to my business acumen and, you know, just how much I've evolved both, you know, spiritually and from a business sense as well. So now I feel more confident, you know, in sharing my story and speaking to women like you. So I think that could be it. It's this position of, you know, thought leadership and influence that, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be, but it, you know, I think deep down, I would like to see myself, you know, on more podcasts and panels or, yeah.
If you could tell your future self one thing, what would that be?
Woo! You are a bad bitch. I've been telling people, like, this year, I feel like I'm 30 now. I feel like this is the year that I'm really stepping into my womanhood. Like, I feel like prior to this, like 10 months ago, I still felt kind of like 18, you know, but now I'm like, my taste is getting better. I'm like furnishing my apartment all cute. you know what I mean? I'm listening to music, I'm lighting my candles, I'm doing my girl boss shit, you know what I mean? I'm running my team, I have money in the bank account, I haven't seen an overdraft fee in months. You know, I think that like, I can't wait to, I'm so excited to meet and be the Britney 5 years from now. She's gonna be so cool. She's gonna be so cool. And I think, you know what I mean? Like, she's gonna be so cool, so bossy, just such a, you know, dope daughter, dope sister. Hopefully, you know, I'll have a little boo by then too. And we'll just make our best lives. You know what I mean? And I'll be traveling and I'll be speaking at summits and I'll be advising other companies and founders. And you know what I mean? I'll be a guest speaker for like a business, you know, at a business school. Like that's where I see me. I'll be going on like spiritual, you know, a 1 week spiritual retreat in Brazil, silent. Ooh, you know what I mean? Silent retreat. I sky is the limit for future Britney. And if I could do all of this, if my life could change this drastically in a year, like I'm going to continue to bet on myself. Like this shit, it's only up from here, girl. I'm excited.
Amen. Amen. Beyond your work, how do you want to be remembered?
That is a great question. You know, I was talking to a friend the other day and I feel like we have such morbid conversations, but we're talking about our funerals, like how we would envision our funeral, you know, and one person said like, I want it to be like a party, you know, I want it to be a party and everyone's just having so much fun. And then for me, I feel like I make, you know, I'm Aquarius, so I make the most random friends, have the most random encounters, you know, I have the most random stories. And I think for me, like, yeah, like at my funeral, I want people to just tell stories about me and be like, bro, Britney's so funny. Like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Like just having these random stories and memories of like the things that we did or the things that I told them, you know, I think to me that would mean so much. And I think I want to be remembered as someone who just, I want the way that I move and the way that I maneuver in life to just be an influence to other people, you know, because even if, let's say, ShopLatinx shut down tomorrow, knock on wood, because that's not going to happen because we're going to be so successful, but like, I still think like, you know, like I still did that. And I feel like that positive mentality, I want that to inspire people. Yeah, I just, you know, I just want to live my life in the lives I touch. And I try to, you know, I try to inspire people as much as I can and empower, but I just hope that, you know, I can give, you know, if I leave, people have this like sprinkle of, you know, Britney dust or something that I told them that just really, really resonated with them.
Here are my top takeaways from our conversation. Number one, move and build in silence. You don't have to announce every step of your journey. Number two, in order for your business to thrive, you have to be mentally and physically healthy. No matter how busy life gets, make time to take care of yourself. After all, your mind is your biggest asset. Number three, followers don't equal money. Make sure your business has the foundation to turn potential customers into loyal clients. Thank you so much for listening. Gracias, mi gente. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave us a review. That's so helpful and exciting to us. If you learned something from this episode, share it with a friend. I'm sure they'll enjoy it as well. We drop new episodes every single Monday morning, but you can always find us on Instagram at El ADN Podcast. And before you leave, we want to hear your takeaways from today's guest. Share with us via Instagram stories and don't forget to tag El ADN Podcast and Victoria Leandra for a regram. El ADN Podcast is executive produced and owned by your host, Victoria Leandra, and edited by Jasmine Plata.